The headlines. Iran says it will not accept any requests beyond the 2015 nuclear agreement as talks to revive the deal begin in Vienna. South Africa slams fellow African nations for imposing travel bans against the country over the new COVID variant Omicron. And Russia warns against U.S. pressure over the certification of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Gaze. Thanks for joining us. Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal launch a new round of negotiations in the Austrian capital in an attempt to break a deadlock over the accord known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Representatives of Iran and P4+1 have convened at Palais Coburg Hotel in Vienna. Ahead of the talks, the Iranian foreign minister stressed that the main goal of the negotiations is the removal of all sanctions imposed, quote, unilaterally and extraterritorially on Iran by the U.S. He said that Iran will not accept demands beyond the deal and will not enter into any discussion over issues which are not related to the accord. Tehran has also warned the other parties that the window of opportunity will not remain open indefinitely.
The new Iranian administration has taken part in the negotiations with genuine determination, good faith, and with fruitful discussions in mind. The other side must seize on this window of opportunity, because this is not a window of opportunity that will remain open forever.
Khatibzadeh said the negotiations will run smoother if the U.S. comes to Vienna to resolve the deadlock and outstanding issues from the previous rounds. He warned that if the U.S. insists on continuing its unilateral measures, Iran will have a, quote, multitude of options available. The spokesman said that Iran seeks to practically verify the U.S. implementation of its commitments under the nuclear deal and the U.N. Security Council resolution endorsing it. He also pointed to a joint statement by the U.K. and the Israeli foreign ministers vowing cooperation against Iran's nuclear program. Khatibzadeh said that Israel has always been hostile to the deal. He noted that some European states do not want the effective implementation of the accord and are not coming to Vienna with the necessary resolve to remove the sanctions. Pomaleski joined us earlier with an update on the talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal that are taking place in Coburg Hotel.
The session is going to end today, but we'll have to see what comes out of it, whether the sides will continue to stay on in Vienna with their expert teams discussing various options to try and get this deal revived. Will they decide to have another joint commission session after how long, we still don't know, but we're expecting Mr. Mora after the meeting to address the media and give us answers. What political observers are saying here is that the new Iranian team seems to have a very tougher stance when it comes to the demands that Iran is making. Is the U.S. going to accept this, willing to do the work? This is something that's going to be made clear, I think, in this round. Iran says it's here to see if the Western side, by which they mean the Europeans and the US, if they are actually going to take action rather than just making statements. Because as Iran, Mr. Barghari has put it in an opinion column that he just published just ahead of these talks, he said that Iran's experience has been one of distrust. And even when the JCPOA was in place and the U.S. was still a part of it, it did not, in practice, lift any sanctions or ease the sanctions on Iran, allowing the country's economy to prosper. So there has to be real action on the ground for these talks to have any meaning for the Iranian side.
Britain has renewed its rhetoric against Iran's nuclear program. Hours before Tehran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal begin new talks in Vienna. The British Foreign Secretary said that the UK will work, quote, flat out, and keep all options on the table to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear bomb. Liz Truss made the comment as she met with her Israeli counterpart Yair Lapid in London. Separately, in a joint article published in the Daily Telegraph on Sunday, Truss and Lapid vowed to prevent Iran from becoming what they called a nuclear power. In response, Iran said the article casts doubt on Western intentions to salvage the accord. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh said that this shows that Europe wants the Vienna talks to drag on and does not seek the effective implementation of the agreement. Iran has time and again said that its nuclear program is solely for peaceful purposes. Rob Carter, a correspondent, joins us from London to elaborate more on this. Rob, it's a very public display of anti-Iran rhetoric that's on show here between the UK and Israel, especially with that article in The Telegraph that we're working day and night to prevent Iran from what they say becoming a nuclear power. How has that reverberated across the spectrum there in the UK, and what more can you tell us about this?
Well, to be honest with you, most people in the UK don't really care about Iran. Iran poses no threat to the UK. Iran isn't involved in interfering in the day-to-day lives of British citizens. But let me tell you one regime that is the Israeli regime. This is a country which we know has been exposed for breaching British citizens' freedom of privacy by using Israeli-made spy software to spy on lawyers and activists, things like that. It's something which we've reported on here at Press TV as well. Now, this is showing just the hypocrisy that this current British government is engaged in when it's in regards to its foreign policy. They're criticizing Iran, which we know has no nuclear weaponry. Their program is purely peaceful and is about getting energy to a sanctioned people, its own people. It's a peaceful program, yet they are signing trade deals and even arm deals with a regime which is engaged in the genocide of native Palestinian people and is also armed with nuclear weapons. So the British government, I think, is so invested in building ties with the new Israeli regime by any means necessary, that we've basically sacrificed, or the UK, the government at least, has sacrificed any remaining credibility that it has left in regards to its foreign policy, particularly when it discusses issues related to the Middle East. They've literally thrown their lot in with Israel right now, and I think it's part of some kind of larger policy. Now that Trump's gone from the White House, Israel has probably offered some kind of deal to number 10, saying, look, we can make you our new number one bosom buddy in the region, if you like, really platform the UK and make you out to be something like you're important globally, some kind of imperial power, as you like to portray yourselves as, but you have to do so such and such for us. We've seen the condemned and criticized labeling of Hamas's political wing as a terrorist organization take place. We've also seen a trade deal being signed, armament deal being signed, and now this very reckless and void of logic rhetoric against Iran, all in favor of what Israel would like to see the UK doing. And this is, without a doubt, one of the most pro-Israel UK governments that we have ever had in the UK, and it's recklessly pro-Israel. It's not impartial in any way, shape, or form. And a final point from me, I think that my position, my views on this is confirmed if you look at what day the UK has chosen to sign these new trade deals to make this anti-Iran rhetoric. It's chosen the day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people in order to make that very dangerous, reckless, and very pro-Israel policy very, very clear. So that powerful message is being sent, I say, not just to Iran. The Iranians, of course, don't see it as a powerful statement anyway, but those messages are being sent to Iran, but also to the Palestinian people as well.
Thank you very much for that. Rob Carter from London. Thank you. Iran's judiciary says it is seriously following up a case that seeks to punish those involved in the assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. General Soleimani was killed in an airstrike in Iraq in 2019. The attack was conducted by the U.S. Yusuf Jalali reports.
2 years after the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military figure, General Qasem Soleimani, the Islamic Republic continues efforts to bring the perpetrators of the assassination to justice. Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, were killed in 2019 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
There are two dimensions to this crime, domestic and international. Regarding the domestic aspect, the culprits are charged with terrorism, actions against national security, and murder, among other crimes. Regarding its international dimension, the U.S. has violated human rights, committed an act of terrorism, and violated many international treaties and conventions, such as paragraph 3 of the UN Resolution 1556 on terrorism.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. This is why the U.S.'s assassination of Soleimani led to a safe interpretation that Washington must be on the terrorist side. Tehran calls the assassination a clear example of state terrorism by the U.S.
Washington needed the terrorists to roam in our region, and that's why it killed the spearhead of the fight against terrorism. Washington has repeatedly admitted that it has created Daesh. It has been proved that the weapons used by Daesh are American, and the terrorists were trained by the U.S. and Israel. They also use American social media platform to publicize their activities and recruit more members without the U.S. taking any action to block their access.
So far, 43 people have been subpoenaed out of 128 people who have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list. Last week, Iranian judiciary officials visited Iraq to form a joint committee with Iraqi judicial experts to continue the probe into the incident. Iran's judiciary says, aside from penalizing the culprits, it is taking steps to have those involved in the matter compensate the damages inflicted to the families of the victims.
This man is known to be the nemesis of the terrorists in the region, so his assassination was a big win for the terrorists and a huge loss for the entire region. That's why the Islamic Republic says it will never back down from its legal pursuit to bring the perpetrators to justice, saying this is to make sure that such incidents will not happen again against its military figures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The South African president has criticized travel restrictions against his country linked to the discovery of a new variant of the coronavirus there. Cyril Ramaphosa says that such a move will only cause more damage to his people.
We need to resist unjustified as well as unscientific travel restrictions that only serve to further disadvantage developing economies. We have seen how some countries have started restricting travel to other countries, thus damaging their economies and particularly sectors of their economies that rely on the travel of people around the world.
Ramaphosa was speaking during a meeting of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. His reactions came after some regional countries followed Europe in imposing travel bans on South Africa amid concerns over the Omicron variant. Earlier, the South African Foreign Ministry also slammed as regrettable and unfortunate the move by some fellow African nations to impose travel bans. South African scientists announced the discovery of Omicron on Thursday, prompting many world countries to impose travel restrictions. Several European countries, including the UK, Germany and the Netherlands, Denmark and the Czech Republic, have already reported Omicron cases. Russia warns the United States against putting pressure on anyone over the implementation and the certification of its Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline to Europe across the Baltic Sea. The Kremlin spokesman said the now completed pipeline is awaiting certification from German regulators and that the matter does not concern Washington. The registration, which has to comply with the EU gas directive, is necessary to launch the pipeline to carry Russian gas from the Arctic region to Germany. U.S. officials have been opposing the pipeline since the very start, arguing that it makes Europe too dependent on Russian energy. The U.S. announced new sanctions on one of the companies involved in the project last week. Washington said the move was to reduce what it called the risks posed by the pipeline to Ukraine and NATO. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the international community does not bear even the slightest responsibility for the Israeli regime's aggressive policies against the Palestinian people. In a statement on the occasion of International Day of Solidarity with Palestinians, the movement referred to the normalization of ties between a number of Arab states and Israel, adding that any attempts to change the reality of the regime and integrate it into the region will fail. The statement also noted that Israel will always remain the main enemy of Palestinian and Muslim nations. Hamas also stressed that a comprehensive resistance, especially an armed one, against the Zionist enemy is the right of the Palestinian people. The movement once again called for greater unity among Palestinians, saying that confronting the ongoing Israeli aggression on Palestinian people and their territories required an immediate agreement on a national rescue plan. November 29 marks the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. The day commemorates the beginning of the never-ending struggle for the Palestinians' independence from the Israeli occupation and against the denial of their inalienable rights. Hashtag Trending brings you social media reactions to the event.
Hello everyone and welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Reza. The United Nations has named November 29th the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people. Stay with us on the 200th edition of Hashtag Trending to see people's reactions to this story throughout social media. Unfortunately, the day marks the shortcomings of the UN and its member states. 74 long years since the General Assembly adopted Resolution 181 to partition Palestine. But after all these years, all the world has seen is an occupation force that grows more aggressive day by day. Rights activists and supporters of the Palestinian cause used the occasion to raise voices in highlighting the plight of the Palestinians who have been denied their basic freedoms through decades of systemic Israeli discrimination. Our first tweet of the day comes from Bahar Rezai, which translates to, Palestine thinks of only one ideal, the liberation of Palestine, and its heroic fighters have become the hearts of the world's anti-imperialist movements throughout the years of occupation. Palestine is the link between all those who think about freedom. Our next tweet comes from Hamdiya A. She wrote, today is International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people. Hashtag free Palestine, free all oppressed nations, free all oppressed people, justice, peace, and equality for all. Many believe it is time for the UN and the international community to abandon the mere solidarity rhetoric. They want the world to take appropriate action against Israeli violations, just as it did with apartheid South Africa. On to our next batch of comments, starting with one by Zahra. It reads, the announcement of World Solidarity Day with the Palestinian people by the United Nations was in fact a propaganda move aimed at reducing criticism of the organization's inaction in the face of Israel's violent behavior and violation of international law. Our next tweet comes from Saida. It reads, we live in an era when the whole world is aware of Israel's crimes. No one will be deceived by the UN game anymore. Well, that's been it for the 200th edition of Hashtag Trending. Don't go anywhere. The rest of world news is up next.
In Honduras, leftist opposition candidate Xiomara Castro declares victory in the presidential election as early results show her taking the lead. Castro's supporters celebrated her victory, even though election authorities had asked political parties to wait for official results. According to the National Electoral Council, with over 50% of the votes counted, Castro has secured more than 53% of the ballots. Her rival Nasri Asfura from the ruling National Party has garnered 34%. The election saw one of the highest turnouts in the country in decades. If elected, Castro would be the first woman to lead the Central American nation. Her presidency would also end years of conservative rule. Castro's husband, Manuel Zelaya, was the last leftist leader to rule Honduras before his deposition in a coup in 2009. And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The limelight.
As rich countries hoard doses and Big Pharma refuses to share the knowledge required to ramp up manufacturing, Cuba's public biotech sector could play a key role in defeating vaccine apartheid. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stansil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Cuba's homegrown COVID-19 vaccines poised to protect millions in poor nations. Stay tuned for more. Despite the added challenges created by a six-decade-long U.S. blockade, Cuba's public biotech sector has developed two highly effective vaccines, and its universal healthcare system has inoculated 4/5 of its population. Additionally, the island has begun exporting its homegrown doses and is on the verge of sharing its recipes with impoverished nations, abandoned by Big Pharma, and wealthy countries. Cuba is now one of the few lower-income countries to have not only vaccinated a majority of its population, Jacobins Branco wrote recently, but the only one to have done so with a vaccine it developed on its own. According to our rolled-in data, Cuba has fully vaccinated 80% of its population against COVID-19, putting it in the top 10 globally and well ahead of several wealthy nations. Nearly 90% of Cubans have received at least one dose, again outpacing most of the world. Even as the Biden administration has intensified Washington's embargo on the island, stifling its economy and depriving its residents of food and medical supplies, including syringes. Branco wrote, Cuba has been able to do the unthinkable, developing its own vaccine and are doing much of the developed world in overcoming the pandemic. Despite its size and level of wealth And despite a policy of concerted economic strangulation from a hostile government off its shores. He added that international solidarity efforts have been vital too, when the U.S. blockade meant a shortage of syringes on the island, jeopardizing its vaccination campaign. Solidarity groups from the United States alone sent 6 million syringes to Cuba, with the Mexican government sending 800,000 more and more than 100,000 on top of that coming from Cubans in China. Since a late August peak of nearly 10,000 cases and almost 100 deaths per day, Cuba's successful vaccination effort has coincided with a major decline in coronavirus infections and mortality. While COVID-19 has claimed the lives of 8,295 Cubans since the pandemic began, the country recorded zero deaths from the disease. Moreover, the country reopened its borders on November 15th to tourism, roughly a tenth of its economy, and has reopened the schools. This makes Cuba an outlier among low-income countries, which have vaccinated only 2.8% of their combined populations. The glaring gap in vaccination rates between rich and poor countries is a result of vaccine hoarding by wealthy governments, which have gobbled up most of the world's doses, occasionally wasting excess supplies even as they tout their insufficient donations and pharmaceutical corporations' refusal to share vaccine formulas, even though the underlying technology is publicly funded. While health justice advocates continue to push for a temporary suspension of deadly intellectual property barriers at the World Trade Organization, a widely supported move that would enable qualified manufacturers to produce generic COVID-19 vaccines, treatments, and tests, Big Pharma has lobbied to maintain its extremely profitable monopoly control over life-saving knowledge. And the industry continues to be backed by the UK, Germany, and a few other opponents of the patent waiver. As that struggle continues ahead of the WTO's biannual ministerial conference that begins on November 30, Branco argued that Cuba's domestic vaccine production suggests a path forward for the developing world as it continues struggling with the pandemic in the face of ongoing corporate-driven vaccine apartheid, and points more broadly to what's possible when medical science is decoupled from private profits. Branco attributed Cuba's successful inoculation drive to the country's decision to develop its own vaccines, two of which Abdallah named for a poem penned by an independent hero, and Soberana II, Spanish for sovereign, were finally given official regulatory approval in July and August. He said, in the words of Vicente Vélez Bencomo, the internationally acclaimed head of the country's Finale Vaccine Institute, the country was betting it safe by waiting longer to manufacture its own vaccines. This way, it would avoid dependence on bigger allies while adding a new commercial export at a time of ongoing economic hardship. These efforts are already underway. Vietnam, with only 39% of its population fully vaccinated, inked a deal to buy 5 million vaccine doses, with Cuba recently shipping more than 1 million of them to its communist ally, 150,000 of which were donated. Venezuela, 32% fully vaccinated, also agreed to buy $12 million worth of the three-dose vaccine and has already started administering it, while Other countries have agreed to partner with the country to develop their own homegrown vaccines. Syria, 4.2%, has recently discussed with Cuban officials the prospect of doing the same. The two vaccines are part of a suite of five COVID vaccines Cuba is developing. That includes a vaccine delivered nasally that's progressed to phase second of clinical studies. One of only five vaccines in the entire world that have a nasal application, according to one of its top scientists, that could be particularly useful if proven to be safe and effective given the virus's entry through the nasal cavity. It also includes a booster shot specially designed to work for those already inoculated with other vaccines, and which was recently trialed on Italian tourists. Since September, Cuba's been in the process of getting World Health Organization approval for its vaccines, which would open the door to its widespread adoption. Unlike the mRNA vaccines produced by Pfizer and Moderna, Cuba opted to develop a more traditional vaccine, as Nature explained recently. In developing Soberana 2, Veres Bencomo's group drew on its existing conjugate vaccine technology. Finalis conjugate vaccines take a protein or a sugar from a bacterium or virus and chemically link it to a harmless fragment of a neurotoxin protein from the tetanus bacterium. Conjugate vaccines against meningitis and typhoid are used around the world, and Cuba has been immunizing children with a vaccine of this type for years. The Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology's Abdala vaccine is also making major strides. As with Soberana 2, the technology behind it is adapted from an existing vaccine, one for hepatitis B, that Cuba developed and has used for many years. Protein-based vaccines like Soberana 2 and Abdala come with multiple advantages. For one thing, Branco wrote, they can be kept in a fridge or even at room temperature, as opposed to the subpolar temperatures the Pfizer vaccine has to be stored at or the freezer temperatures Moderna's vaccine requires, making distribution easier, especially in developing countries and remote areas. Alluding to other vaccines' extreme cold storage requirements, Helen Yaff, senior lecturer in economic and social history at the University of Glasgow, told Branco that in the global south, where huge amounts of the population have no access to electricity, is just another technological obstacle. Moreover, because Cuba has relied on conjugate vaccines for many years to protect people, including children, from typhoid, Bencomo told Nature he is confident that Soberana 2, which has been used to inoculate nearly 2 million Cuban children so far, is safe across age groups. Branco noted the mRNA technology, which has never been used on kids before, has meant a lag between adult and child vaccination in the developed world, and means vaccines for kids under 5 are still being developed. Cuba, by contrast, aimed from the outset to create a vaccine that kids could take, he added. As of this month, it's fully vaccinated more than 4/5 of all kids aged 2 to 18. Arguably, the most important aspect of Cuba's vaccines, proponents say, is that their development demonstrates the existence of an alternative model for scientific research that puts people over profits. The Cuban vaccine, Yaff told Branco, is 100% entirely a product of a public biotech sector. Franco explained, while in the United States and other developed countries, life-saving medicines are developed thanks largely to public funding before their profits and distribution are ruthlessly privatized for corporate enrichment, Cuba's biotech sector is wholly publicly owned and funded. That means Cuba has decommodified a vital human resource, the exact opposite policy direction that we have seen in these last four decades of neoliberalism. Despite a crushing blockade by the United States government, responsible for a third of the world's pharmaceutical production, Cuba's biotech sector has thrived. It makes nearly 70% of the roughly 800 medicines that Cubans consume and 8 of the 11 vaccines in the country's national immunization program, and it exports hundreds of millions of vaccines a year. Their revenues are then reinvested into the sector.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tonight I want to delve into the topic of sustenance, of rizq. We see in the du'as of the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet alayhim as-salam many times, this word rizq is in the du'a. Allahumma rizqni rizqan halalan tayyiban wasi'an. O Allah, give me this, grant me this sustenance which is halal, is permissible, is tayyib, is wholesome, it's holy, it's purified wealth. halalan tayyiban wasi'an, this expansive wealth. But what actually is rizq? Is it just limited to amount of money? Just dollars and cents in your bank account? Is that all rizq is? Is that all that can solve your and my problems? Meaning that if Allah were to give you or to give me unlimited wealth, that I could be like Bill Gates, or I could be like Warren Buffett, or I could be like Oprah Winfrey, or I could be like one of these billionaires in the world, would that solve my problem? Would I now be able to pay all my bills and worship Allah? Would I have no other issues in life if I had all the money in the world? Sometimes people tell me, why did Allah not make me a millionaire or a billionaire, but He gave it to the kuffar? He gave the billionaires in the world who don't believe in God all of this money. They have no problems, apparently. And we'll see if they do or not. But I work 40, 50, 60, 80 hours a week just to pay the bills. And I barely have time to pray and fast and do my wajibat. Why didn't God give me such rizq in my life? First of all, we have to, and this is a very vast topic, obviously, and I don't know if we'll be able to go through all of the angles tonight, but we'll try our best, inshallah. But the point number one is that when you ask, what is rizq? We have to realize that rizq is something granted to us by Allah. Like the verse I began with, that there is not a single moving creature on this earth except that Allahi rizquha, except that Allah is the one who grants that rizq to that creature. The ant that lives under the ground, the elephant in the jungle, and the human being in Calgary, we are all getting our rizq from one source, from Allah. And keep in mind, brothers and sisters, that when we talk about rizq in the hadith or in the ayat of the Quran, that this is limited to the halal that we get. So when somebody buys a Lotto 649 and wins $17 million, that's not rizq. If a Muslim brother or a Muslim sister has a business and they're selling alcohol, which is haram, they're selling pork products, which is haram, if they make money at the end of the day when they cash out the till at night, that's not rizq, that's haram. So rizq is what Allah gives of the pure, of the halal, of the tayyib, that which comes from Allah. If it doesn't come from Allah, if it's not pure, it's not from, if it's not pure, it's not from Allah. If it's not from Allah, it's not rizq in that sense. So as other hadith tell us, that don't expect you to have barakah, blessings, good fortune in money which is not halal, which is not earned from permissible means. And permissible, we can maybe even go out on a limb and say that if you and I do not pay the khums that we talked about the other night in one of our Q&A sessions, if you're not paying your khums, then there is a very strong possibility that your savings are not permissible. They are illicit earnings, because there is a right of Allah in that wealth. And so we may even say that that wealth could be haram, impermissible to use, illicit earnings, even though it may have come from a permissible source to begin with. Now, coming back to what is rizq, when we look at the Quran and we look at the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam, we see that Allah and the explanation given by the infallibles do not limit rizq to money or to wealth. So for example, rizq, we can say, can be anything which Allah gives to us, which Allah blesses us with, which gives us inner peace and is actually preparing us for the akhirah, for the world to come. So for example, in the hadith, we're told that ilm, knowledge, you know, when we ask Allah for ilm, that ilm is a form of rizq, is a form of sustenance. We're told in the hadith, for example, that the ability to perform hajj. What do we say in Shahr Ramadan, that one of the supplications? Allahumma rizukni hajj baytika al-haram. Fi ami hadha wa fi kulli am. We have other hadith that talk about jihad fi sabilillah is a form of rizq, to be a shaheed in the way of Allah. And we know the very famous verse which is mentioned multiple times in the Quran, where Allah speaks of the shuhada and He says, وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ كُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتٍ بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ إِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ. Do not consider those who have been killed in the way of Allah as being dead. Rather, they are alive in the presence of their Lord, Yurzakun. They're getting rizq. The shuhada, as the shuhada of Taf, of Karbala, in the realm that they are existing in right now, are being given rizq, sustenance by Allah. But it's not the food that you and I eat. What is it? Well, that's beyond our, you know, even scope of understanding of what kind of rizq the shuhada are getting. But they are receiving something from Allah. And so that's why we say that rizq, do not limit your rizq understanding definition to be only wealth. Consider anything that you need to live this life and to live the world to come as being a rizq. Knowledge is rizq. Children are rizq. Going for hajj is the rizq, is a dua that we ask, which is that rizq. And obviously money, the wealth that we need to pay our bills, this is also rizq from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, where does rizq come from? Who gives it to us? As I said, you know, you go to work, you get a paycheck, or you get your direct deposit. But is that your razik? No, we don't believe that. Allah is the ultimate giver, but yes, He uses means in this world. And the hadith tell us that Allah doesn't like to do things other than through their asbab, the rule of cause and effect. So Allah uses means on this planet to do things. He can do them directly, but you going to work, that is the means that Allah provides your rizq. And all the other examples, you go to school to get an education, your teacher is the one who is giving you the knowledge, but through the ability, through the permission, through the knowledge granted to them by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so in the Quran, for example, if you look at chapter number 42, Surah Ash-Shura, verse number 12, Allah speaks about this. He says, "Lahu maqalidu samawati wal ardh." To Allah, to Him belong the keys to the treasures of the skies and the earth. يَبْسُطُ الرِّزْقَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيَقْدِرُ إِنَّهُ بِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ عَلِيمٌ يَبْسُطُ الرِّزْقَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ. He expands the rizq of whomever He wants. وَيَقْدِرُ لَهُ. And for other people, He constricts it. He limits the rizq. He gives a different proportion to certain people. So sometimes you and I see this and you ask, and people ask that, why is it that these millionaires and billionaires, whether in our own Muslim community or in the world around us, why do they have so much money? You know, I remember reading a statistic about Bill Gates, if I'm not mistaken. They say he has so much money that even if he spent $1 million a day, he would have enough to last him over 300 years. Now you think about that. How do you even spend $1 million a day? What can you buy? What, you know, what could you do with that much money? Well, as I talked about a few nights ago, you could definitely alleviate human suffering, poverty. You could eliminate the 30,000 children dying every day because of malnutrition. You could do a lot with that kind of money. But as Allah says, يَبْسُطُ الرِّزْقَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيَقْدِرُ. For some of us, Allah gives us ample rizq, ample sustenance. Other people, they're not in that category. I'm not going to say they're unfortunate. I'm not going to say they're unlucky. No, that's not us, for us to judge, and we'll explain why I say that. But we have to realize that when we see people that have unlimited wealth, don't always think about it as being a blessing from Allah. We unfortunately tend to look at things in this material world in that way. If somebody has something, Allah must love them. If somebody loses something, Allah must hate them, right? This is sometimes how we look at things. We need to realize and reevaluate our understanding of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And even Allah talks about this in the Quran. He says that when there are some people who have been given wealth, what do they say? Rabbi akramani. And then Allah says, when Allah limits their rizq, they say, my God, my Lord has been unfair to me, unjust to me. As if they look at give and take by Allah as being being in Allah's good books or Allah's bad books, not realizing that that's not the scale that Allah works on.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
You have just listened to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Being outstanding is a divine blessing for which one should be grateful to God. This is a part of the speech delivered on November 17, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of the academic elite and top scientific talents of the country. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. All praise is due to God, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and upon his pure progeny, especially the remnant of God on earth. I am happy to see that, praise God, this meeting is taking place this year. Of course, in previous years, we met with outstanding students every year. but last year we were not able to do so. Today's meeting was beneficial for me. I have truly benefited from what our friends and dear ones, both the boys and the girls, have said here. Now, the next step is to judge the accuracy, depth, and correctness of the statements. One needs to reflect more on what you have said, but overall, what I have heard here was useful for me, and I have benefited from this meeting.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I am very thankful to those friends who took the trouble to talk here. I will first mention a few points about the academic elite and being outstanding in general. If there is enough time left at the end, I will also mention a few points about knowledge-based companies. The first point, my dear ones, is that being outstanding is a divine blessing and gift, which one should thank God for. The first thing that you should think about is thanking God for this blessing. The Holy Quran says, "And give thanks for Allah's favors, if it is He whom you serve." The Holy Quran, Surah 16, verse 114. This is in the chapter The Bee. The phrase, "and give thanks for Allah's favors," can be found elsewhere in the Holy Quran as well. This is a perpetual duty. Later on, I will expand on the way one should thank God. But the first point is to think about thanking God for the blessings and gifts of genius.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.